And now, get ready, folks. It's time for Banter with Bob Sherwood and Dan Snell. Banter. And now, here's Bob and Dan.
Hello, guys and gals. What's the big news? Oh, my gosh, there's so much news going on today. I'm just going crazy. And I really love the F-47. The F-47 is destined to be the most powerful fighter in the aircraft in the world, and Trump announced it today, and great, great marketing ploys to Boeing.
Yeah, good for Boeing. I'm happy for Boeing, $20 billion. Now, did they release anything that's special about the plane other than it's the greatest sixth generation?
No, I didn't say it. Well, first place, they're not going to release any details.
Is it pilot? Is it with a pilot or pilotless? Is it a drone
first
type?
Place, they didn't release any details, but you can be sure that it has a pilotless application.
Sure.
You can be sure of that. They're not going to release those kind of things because, first place, they sell these planes to other countries. And when they sell a plane to another country, they never give that country the same level of weaponry that we have. We never give them the whole thing.
Right.
So they're not going to talk about the details. But clearly, I don't think they even said when it'll be ready to fly, right? But clearly it's going to be, it'll be clone-based. Not clone, what do you call it?
Drone-based,
or it'd be able to fly without a...
without a pilot. Yeah, now they said that the last 5 years there's been one flying around the country. That's alleged.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, but I don't know that. But hey, listen, so that's a big deal for me. And by the way, I was very happy because I made this unbelievable prediction about Boeing. And of course, I've been totally wrong so far. But I'm happy that Trump has realized he's got to keep Boeing in the picture and gave him a $20 billion contract, right?
Yes, you have. I acknowledge you have been talking about Boeing for a year.
And Boeing went up they went up $12 a share today. So we're seven today and five yesterday. So it's a big deal for Boeing. And it kind of like tells people, hey, you know, they may have had some problems, but they're fixing them. We're giving them a $20 billion contract. And not giving it to Lockheed. So
very, very happy for Boeing. And it's sad. One of the things you and I talk about is the social media and how people jump on things. And we're approaching Good Friday and Easter coming up, Peter, before the cock crows, you'll deny me three times. I'll bet you by the end of the day, we will see all kinds of social media attacks on Boeing about all their past problems, which you and I have been talking about because everybody jumps on the bandwagon to attack them. I'm just happy for them. I wish everybody would just be cheerful and happy that the American company Boeing has got a $20 billion contract to make America strong in the airwaves. I'm happy about that.
I do too, and it also he sends a message to there's the overt message to Russia that we're going to keep up militarily.
Yeah,
we're not going to stop building the best fighter aircraft in the world. So that's another message that he's sending, right?
Subliminal.
We're going to fund our military, and as he's done before with the people at Yemen, he's going to use it when he can. And I think that's exactly right.
Yemen. I wonder where that country got its name. What is that? Is that Yemen named after some great?
Probably Mr. and Mrs. Yemen.
Yeah. Hey, Google. I'm going to ask Google. Hey, Google, how did the country Yemen get its name? No, I don't want you to send messages. Google's a little lost today. He's trying to be Gemini. Hey, Google, the country Yemen, how did it get its name Yemen?
According to Wikipedia, other sources claim that Yemen is related to Yam or Yun, meaning felicity.
Okay. It's related to yam or yun, meaning felicity or blessed. Much of the country is fertile, in contrast with the barren land of most of Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
The Romans called it Arabia Felix, which means happy or fortunate, as opposed to Arabia Deserta, the desert of Arabia. Interesting. So Yemen has a lot of good, maybe farming there in Yemen. So, you know, maybe we should make Yemen the 52nd state and have them do our crops.
Okay, let's keep moving here. We got Eli Lilly, and this is what I kind of talked about yesterday, is that the whole tariff thing may be directed at not so much bringing manufacturing back to the United States, but taking companies that are already manufacturing overseas, and as they expand their manufacturing, have the expansions be in the United States. Now, Eli Lilly just put out a notice today. Let me see if I can locate it real fast. Wait a minute here.
You need to. We've got multiple staff members there in your office. We've got an executive producer, a director, the lighting, the camera. Somebody should look this up for you. Let me try to help them. Eli Lilly.
Yeah, well, I had it for a second. Now
you got so many screens there. Announcement, news.
How many screens can you see?
Eli, breaking news. Eli launches.
Well, wait a minute. How many screens can you see?
No, I can. I can only see you one screen.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, so don't kind of confuse me there, right? So let me get it a second here. Well, you've had the Eli Lilly one. Then you could, if you look at it, I can remember it. Basically, the idea of the Eli Lilly is that rather than they're already spending like whatever the number is, something like $500 million or something. So they're actually increasing their American investment by another $50 million.
$50 billion. Just breaking news here. I'm just reading it here.
Yeah.
They say that they're going to exceed $50 billion in U.S. manufacturing investment. Good for them.
Right. Well, actually, the way it's worded, they're already spending quite a bit of money now, and they're increasing it by about 20%. So what I'm saying is this. They're already saying we're spending money investing in the United States now, but we're increasing the amount of money we're going to spend by another, I think, 50 or 60 billion.
Yeah, they have a weight loss drug, though, that they just moved to India to manufacture.
Yeah.
Which is not
well,
good.
They're not saying they're stopping manufacturing, and they're not saying they're bringing back manufacturing. That's what my point, right? You understand my point?
Yeah.
They're not saying bringing it back. That's the effect of the tariffs. The tariffs, just like Apple, they're not bringing anything back, but as they forecast forward, as these companies forecast forward, their new investment is going to be made in the United States because of the tariffs.
I like it. I like it. Now, Bob, it's Friday. People are listening to Banter with Bob and Dan.
Yeah.
And some people leave. They're happy to go home on a Friday. They're going to watch NCAA basketball. Maybe if not, they're going to be thinking about maybe they don't like their job. They don't like their boss. They don't like working for the man. And so they might want to have a side gig. And you and I talked earlier today. You had some great ideas based on your background as a serial entrepreneur. And things you start about how to help people with their side gigs, their time. Why don't you tell us a little bit your thoughts?
I can tell you something that it's something that I did a long time ago. And first place, I'll say this. If you wish a copy of this Excel spreadsheet to use for yourself, then email us at
webtalkbob@gmail.com,
and I'll show you a sample of the spreadsheet. But really what it does is this. You set up a series of columns. The first column is, let's say, how you spend your time. Now, I'll give you an example of my time. I spend browsing. I spend time working with clients. I spend time emailing. So you divide up all your time in terms of those kinds of events. One event might be spending with current clients. Then you put down how many hours you spend with that client each week. And then you put down another column. You put down, if everything goes okay, what's the maximum income I might get from that client? Now, some cases it'll be zero. In some cases, it might be $100,000, right?
Yes. So
then you take your columns and you calculate an ROI based on your time. It's really straightforward. I had about 30 interns do it every week. Every week they had to turn in a spreadsheet explaining where they spent their time and how it could be related to actually sales income for a client. And they had to show that they had a high percentage, that 90% of their time was spent generating real income for a client. Now, it was predictive, right? But it's the same way. For example, if I spend time with one of my legal clients, maybe that client can give me $50,000 a year worth of business. So he's worth spending N numbers of hours, right?
Right.
But if it takes me 1,000 hours to get that $50,000, then he's not valuable to me because that's $50 an hour. See, one of the important parts of this is you put in what your time value is. And you compute.
Is that new? Is this, you know, breaking news here? Because I've used your spreadsheet, and I will vouch, folks.
No, no, no. You haven't used the spreadsheet. No, no, Dan.
It's not the spreadsheet?
No. You have time tracker.
That's a great deal, too.
No, you have a time tracker. This is an ROI for your time.
Okay, this is ROI.
And what it does is it forces people to think about what is their time worth. If your time is worth $10 an hour, you can throw it away doing all kinds of things.
Right.
But if you think yourself, I had a guy doing some work for me the other day, started a new business in Kansas City. And I asked him what his guideline was. He said, I'm trying to make $150 an hour gross income. So whatever hour my whole team works, we'll try to gross $150 an hour. And I thought, that's a good start. Because now he can actually start computing his ROI based on expenses. Now, to cut all this short, because this is probably not banterable material, if you want to see how that's done, how you evaluate your time, not how you spend your time, what Dan just mentioned called Easy Tracker is an Excel spreadsheet that I developed for time tracking.
And it's excellent for a guy like me. You know, Bob knows we've been friends almost 20 years next year. Lots of times I have, ding, 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 ding. I have an idea. A light bulb pops on in my head. I have an idea. And I've used the time tracker, and people know that, watch, I live on ADD Street, right? So I get the idea, living on ADD Street, but your Easy time tracker really has helped me keep track of, you know, I spend almost an hour and a half a day walking my faithful dog Hercules here, who's at my feet here. That's an hour and a half out of, 16 hours. There's a lot of things
You produce no income, but it's valuable to you.
Yes. Yeah, it's valuable to the peace and well. It gives me oxytocin, right? It makes me feel good hormone.
It's very, very hard to keep track of your time. The only people that really know how to do it are lawyers and accountants because they have to do it every week for billable hours.
Right.
But the rest of us, we don't have to do it. As a result, we don't do it. So I'll go tracking my time for 3 or 4 days pretty good. And then I'll get into a bad habit and I'll stop doing it for another 3 or 4 days. Then I'll start again. And you have to keep starting and stopping and starting until it becomes a habit. That takes 6 months.
Yeah.
Now, I'll give an example. There's another thing that came out today that J&J, not Eli Lilly, they said on Friday it will boost its U.S. investments by 25% to over $55 billion in the next 4 years, right? Uh-huh. So it's increasing its investments in the United States. That's what I believe the tariffs actually do. Now, as I've said before, I believe the tariffs itself will eventually wash away and it'll wash into what I call currency valuations. But aside from that, what it's doing is if these companies are going to make investments like J&J or like Eli Lilly or like Apple, what are they going to do? They're going to say, okay, all our new investments are going to be in the United States. And that's what Trump is trying to do. He's really not trying to say to somebody, hey, don't manufacture in Taiwan anymore. Move that to the United States. That's not ever going to happen. All right. But if you're going to invest another $1 billion in manufacturing, invest that in the United States. And that's why if you go to Arizona, you see a big sign, you know, it's about 8 feet square. It says Intel. If you go not far from there, you see another big sign that says Taiwan Semiconductor. Right. Those are all the result of, in a way, I'd say they're a result of what Biden has done. Probably the best thing I think he's done. And he shouldn't have stopped there. And I think if Kamala Harris and what's his name, the other guy, the guy
Tim
that's
Walz.
The nitwit.
Tim Walz. He's born in Nebraska. You know I'm going to stick up for him.
My guy, who's my guy that I like, tell it like it is guy? What's his name?
From Missouri, the senator from Missouri?
No, he's on TV.
Oh, Bill O'Reilly. I love him.
Bill O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly just says, hey, he's a nitwit. Why talk about him anymore? He's a nitwit.
Yeah, Mr. Wonderful, you mean? Mr. Wonderful?
No, I don't mean Kevin O'Leary. I mean O'Reilly.
Okay.
O'Reilly.
Yeah, yeah, folks, just look at Bob. Doesn't he kind of remind you of Bill O'Reilly, just listening to him?
I want to be Bill O'Reilly.
And I say that with the utmost respect because I love Bill O'Reilly.
I want to be Bill O'Reilly. I listen to him at night, and I realize he is a lot like me, except he's just about 100 times more wealthy than I am. But other than that,
yeah. I want to be like Chris Cuomo.
Well, good for you. You know, be on Chris Cuomo and, you know, work out of your basement. But anyway, going back here, so we got Eli Lilly. What else is going on in the news?
Well, you know, today Trump, he was, I don't know why. Why was he suing law firms? Why was he doing that, Bob? I don't understand. Why is a president having the Department of Justice sue law firms that went after him during his previous years? It's a waste of time and money.
Maybe. Well, that's Perkins Coie.
Well, yeah, I was just going to ask you, Perkins, when I heard that name Perkins, you know, you're Silicon Valley investor, Perkins, all that big name company.
No, not Dan.
Any relation?
No. Okay. Perkins Coie is one of the largest law firms in the United States. And as you know, law firms are traditionally associated with Democrats or Republicans. They don't like to talk about it, but they are.
Interesting.
And, Perkins Coie basically have been accused of the law firm that was behind the Russian thing where they accused Trump of being with, women.
Collusion, Russia, as he always says.
And so Bill O'Reilly says, look, let's be clear about Trump. If you take advantage of Trump, if you beat up on him, guess what he's going to do? He's going to beat up on you back. Yes. And that's what he's doing, right?
It's the thumb theory. He likes to have his thumb. If you're playing thumbs with Donald Trump, he won't quit until his thumb.
Oh, yeah. He wants, people say revenge is bad, but my God, look what Jesus did. You know, if he parted the Red Sea and then he killed all those people that went across it, right?
So would not equate Jesus and revenge, but God can handle any revenge, but he's more of loving. But yeah, Trump likes, I don't understand that retribution. You know?
I'm very much in favor of retribution. I'm very much in favor of revenge. And
well, what good does it do? Tell me, what is the value of retribution?
I don't know. It makes me feel good. If you take advantage of me and I get even with you, I feel good.
So yesterday we talked about relationships and outcome. Yeah. You're an outcome guy with some relationship. I'm a relationship guy that also likes outcome. But what's the outcome of retribution? So you look and get to say, I punished you?
Somebody takes advantage of you, and you, let's say somebody hits you, and you hit them back. Don't you feel good? I do.
Yeah. Well,
there you go. It's the same thing.
That's a physical. Physical.
It's the same thing. Mental, physical, abusive. If you abuse me, if you take advantage of me, if you screw me in a business deal, I'm going to look for some way to get right back at you. I'm not going to spend my life doing it, but if I have an opportunity to do it, like he does now as president. So, yeah, I don't, you know, and Bill O'Reilly tells it like he is. He says, look, if you take advantage of Trump, he's going to try to get even with you.
Bill O'Reilly, I think, along with Chris Cuomo is the best, and Brett Baer on Fox. I like Brett. He's pretty fair. Those three guys, good.
Yeah, but what I'm saying about Riley is he's telling it like it is, and I agree. And nothing, you know, I let a person take advantage of me a few years ago. I filed a lawsuit. I stopped the lawsuit because I felt it was damaging to my family. I regret it to this day. I should have basically taken these guys to court, because I think about it now. Why didn't I do that? I'll be on my deathbed thinking, God, I wish I'd have gotten back to that person, because I could have. But anyway,
just let it go.
Anyway,
just,
going back again, the DOE, the DOE thing, that's unbelievable to me.
Well,
the Education Department was established in 1979 after Congress passed the DOE Organization Act, signed into law by former President Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter. Yeah.
I am a nuclear engineer. I am a nuclear engineer. That's Jimmy Carter. Republicans, including former President Ronald Reagan of all, have since spent decades calling for the department to be dismantled. You know, and I understand this whole thing is that they clearly can't get rid of the department without congressional approval, but he can dismantle it to the point where it's useless, right? He can do that without Congress.
Yeah, I think it's good to return a lot of the money. Now, I just want to make sure, okay, we're going to cut how many ever $30 billion of Department of Education funding. I want to make sure that the equal amounts of money doesn't just get thrown back into the treasurer to be spent on tax, you know.
Well,
reduction.
You got enough senators that'll take care of that.
You want to make sure it goes to the states.
The senator's job, you know what a senator's job is?
For sure, it's to make sure they get the money back
exactly.
to their turf.
So like every state has a number. You can get the state. It'll say, we send a dollar there, we get 80 cents back. Some states send a dollar, get $1.30 back. Anyways, that's their job.
So let's circle back around the F-47 we were talking about, which is defense. Today, the Ayatollah Khomeini, he's probably an avid watcher of banter, I'm sure. And he responded to Trump talking about the Houthis and going after them. He said that the United States is going to receive a severe slap. Now, that's an interesting term.
He's another idiot again, right?
The Ayatollah Khomeini?
Yeah, because if he slaps us, what do you think Trump's going to do? He's going to kick him in the ass. What I mean is slap. And all Trump has to do is just give the Israelis just an indication, and they'll go over there and wipe out all those nuclear facilities. And by the way, Iran is dependent on the oil. Yeah. They believe that we will never get rid of their oil wells, their oil supplies over there, you know, the oil fields, right?
Right.
They're always protected. I don't think Trump feels that way. I think he'll say, okay, I'll just wipe out all your oil fields. So what? We have all we need.
For our listeners, viewers, this is Banter with Bob and Dan. Yeah. If you want to write us, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. We're on YouTube, on Apple, iTunes, podcast. And breaking news, I'm going to start adding to a very hot, up-and-coming social media or media site, Substack. Have you heard of Substack, Bob?
Yes.
Substack. I'm going to put us out there.
We got to decide, what's the goal for our banter? What is our goal?
Just to stimulate thought.
No, my goal is to become bigger than Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan.
We want to become the biggest bantering for what I'll call the common folk.
Every man, huh?
We're like people who just read this stuff and think about it, right?
And you got a small town, David City, Nebraska guy. You were born right here in Kansas City, but we just talked about Iran. You've spent time in work in the early days, what, 80s? 80s in Iran. You've been there. You've been to Paris. You've been to South Africa. Been to Australia. You've been all over the world.
I had an office in Tehran. I've been in most of the cities between. If you get out a map and put a dot in Tehran, and then put a dot in Isfahan, and I've been in most of the cities between there.
Isfahan. I've never even heard of that.
Isfahan. Isfahan.
See, that's why, folks, you want to listen to banter.
Stories about Iran and their ties to America, even today, their ties to America. When they want their people to be educated, by the way, where do you think they send them? To Iranian colleges?
No.
They send them to University of California, to Michigan, to Stanford, to Harvard. That's where they send their people to be educated. Then
the
they
U.S.
go
of A.
Iran. Yeah, what I'm saying is, I mean, think about it, right? Does anybody in the United States go to an Iranian college to learn college stuff?
The University of Tehran. They call them universities there? What do they call them?
I don't know what they call them. I don't know what they call them. But the point is that people, they don't... They're not so stupid they think we can send their own people to Iranian universities. They come over to the United States. I mean, it won't be long. You're probably reading about Trump saying, will accept no more people from Iran into the United States.
Well, and maybe
I think he'll just say that. He'll say, okay, it's over because we're not taking any more people. And any of your people that are in colleges now, we're sending them home.
Unless they buy the Trump gold card, right?
I don't know. Maybe. They can afford it. But remember, there's a word for it. They are highly leveraged because they think no one will ever destroy their oil fields. And that's where they make their money, by selling oil to other countries. And Trump is going to talk about that. He's going to say, he's going to make darn sure that we don't buy oil, not only directly from Iran, but from any proxy, Iranian proxy. Oh, by the way, let's switch over to another subject since we're going to be at 40 minutes today, right?
Yes.
Brian Kohlberger. He's the one that killed or allegedly killed four people on November 13th, 2022. I remember it because November 13th was basically 9 days before my birthday. I was born on November 22nd, not in Kansas City, by the way, St. Joseph, Missouri. But in any way, right?
This is the Idaho University murders, or Utah, was it? Idaho.
Remember, this guy was getting a PhD in criminology. I keep saying that if he did this, he did it deliberately. Or here's my other big theory. He didn't do it, but he wanted to make it look like he did do it and eventually get off and write a book that'll make him $25 million.
Boy, wouldn't that be the case?
And so I've been following it. And of course, they have all kinds of change of venue requests. And the only real thing, and remember, this guy's not stupid. He bought the K-bar, the knife, on Amazon. So they proved that, right? And they found the sheath at the place where the people were killed, and the sheath had his DNA on it, which I'm not sure about that, because I understand they could not match his DNA against the sheath, but they matched his dad's DNA, and they said that was good enough. So I may have that exactly wrong, but that's what I understand. The DNA reporting has been pretty loose and pretty not very clear. But the only thing that links him to the murders are the sheath that was left there that somehow is directly associated with him. But here's my point. My point is, I think this guy's going to get off. Remember now, it's been 2 years now. We're now in March of 2025. That's 2.5 years. So probably the taxpayers already spent $1 million taking care of this guy.
Yeah.
And he's not gone to trial yet. It may not go to trial. It just may, they're just, because there's so many motions. Remember, the defense, which are appointed by the court, they're racking up big hours on this thing, right?
Sure.
And the court can't put a limit on that, because the court has to be able to say, if the guy is found guilty, that we gave him a fair trial. We didn't put any limitations on the defense, right?
Yeah.
So this is like the defense, they can retire on this case.
That's interesting, the whole concept of violent crime and murder. You know, you and I have been around many decades, and I'm trying to think back in the 60s, 70s, 80s. When was the death penalty across the country? That was kind of in the 70s or 80s.
I got to make one more point. The current argument here is that, did Kohlberger have bushy eyebrows at the time of the murder? That's the current argument. So the defense is putting up arguments that he didn't have any bushy eyebrows. Look at his driver's license. Look at pictures. And the prosecution is relying on this one person that was not killed, right, who says, I saw this guy. It was dark. He had a hoodie on, but I'm pretty sure he had bushy eyebrows.
Bushy eyebrows.
I mean, come on. This is like, how much money are we going to spend on this? Because
the bushy eyebrow theory.
Because the prosecution wants to link this one person's testimony that they saw a person with bushy eyebrows with the Kohlberger had bushy eyebrows.
He's
right?
too young to have bushy eyebrows, although he does got thick, curly hair, as I recall.
No, but I'm just saying, I mean, I think they could discredit this witness easily because it was dark. She admits she could see him only blurrily. He had a hoodie on, right? And yet, she could see he had bushy eyebrows. Now, my wife would probably say, well, that's probably right, because if my wife looks at me, she always says, Bob, you got to get your eyebrows cut.
The Helen bushy eyebrow suggestion. Yeah. I don't ever think, I've never really noticed. I have once in a while.
Women look at eyebrows. Women look at eyebrows. I don't know why, because they're thinking about their own eyebrows, you know?
Yeah.
So what else we got, right?
So we got, you know, we talked a little bit about tariffs. We talked about, you know, Trump. We talked yesterday about the Declaration of Independence. You got any further thoughts on that? In the White House.
A couple things, but I want to go back to, there was a recently an airplane accident, and I'm trying to remember now where it was, right?
Well,
it was
Pennsylvania has had a lot of them.
Maybe it was an Alaska one. There was a small plane. So anyway, they did some analysis, and according to the analysis, the plane was overweight, right, by 800 pounds. Well, they did some additional analysis because of the surface of the runway, they determined that the plane itself was overweight without any baggage. I couldn't even believe this, but I'm reading it right now. Is that the plane itself without any baggage was over the maximum takeoff gross weight, because the maximum takeoff has to be modified for the surface, you know.
Yeah, the speed though, right? That's so, that's a liability. So there, that's
the plane couldn't take off, and then in addition to that, the plane took on another 800 pounds of baggage and people, and that's why it crashed. It had too many people. Now that's I'm reading this thing, and because they had forecast icing conditions, it raises the takeoff weight, or the acceptable off weight, right? And they raised it to 9,865 pounds, which was 1,000 pounds more than the plane weighed.
Speaking of takeoff, there's always things I find fascinating. Yeah. You and I get into conversations. You were telling me that you use your phone and you time the runway time and when planes take off.
Right.
And when you were recently in Hawaii, not bad, how are you? You actually timed the plane. Tell us that story.
Well, generally, it takes about 25 seconds from the time your engines are at full speed, which is, you know, like a half a second as you're rolling, to the time you take off.
Yeah.
About 25 seconds. And it might take a bit longer for a 747, but that's for like a 737 or some of those type of aircraft, right? And when I was in Hawaii, we were in a 737 MAX.
This is Maui, which you fly in right over the water. It's like all of a sudden water, runway.
We're taking off from Maui.
Okay.
We're taking off from Maui, Dan. Now, it's a 6-hour flight over to Phoenix. So that means the plane was max weight, right? Had to probably have 9 hours of fuel, because they have to have 2 or 3 hours extra fuel beyond their destination point.
Yeah.
That means they're fully loaded. Plus the plane was fully loaded. Okay, so now we're taking off. And I'm looking at my watch. And the plane, when it takes off, you'll notice that the front end of the airplane kind of lifts off just a hair, right? Off the wheels, the front wheel comes up first.
Yeah.
And then about another 7-second delay and the plane finally takes into the air. Now, this particular day, we're taking off. The front end of the plane lifts off. So I can feel the plane. Now it means we're not off the ground yet, but the plane was lifting off just a hair. You could feel it. And I was in row 12. So I'm now higher than the people in the back, right? And then all of a sudden, the front nose of the plane dropped as if they were deciding not to take off.
Uh-oh.
And then within 2 seconds, I heard the engine just go up to max sound, and then the nose lifted back off again, back up again, and the plane took off fine.
Oh, man, can you imagine the adrenaline in the cockpit there? They probably thought, okay, we're going to stop. No, we don't. We can't make it. We can't make it. We got to go, 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 go.
Yeah, they were beyond. I explained this to one of my friends at Boeing. He said they were probably beyond the time in which they could stop. So the only choice was to go maximum on the engines and take off, which they did, no problem. Now, I was always curious as to what happened, and I asked my friend from Boeing, I said, what do you think might have happened? I said, well, they might have looked down at their instruments and saw something that didn't make sense to them, all right? And said, oh, this is not going right. We've got to stop. But at the same time, their instruments said, oh, can't stop anymore. So they took off. But honestly, God, I asked my traveling partner if that person noticed it, and they said no. It only happened. It lasted about 2.5 seconds. Nose goes up. And I'm thinking, we're taking off. Nose goes down. I'm thinking, we're not taking off. I hear the engines clearly got louder. Nose went back up. We took off, no problem. Flew to Phoenix. Never a mention from the pilot that, in fact, happened.
Yeah, and most people wouldn't notice it, but you watch for it. You are
observant. And so I'm just kind of watch that takeoff, because that's usually, you know, the biggest troubles are takeoff and landings. And so I'm always on the takeoff. I'm always feeling nervous until we get above 10,000 feet. Above 10,000 feet, even if they have a problem, they can do something. But in the first couple thousand feet, there's nothing they can do. And I've watched a number of these, plane disaster movies. And if they have a problem within the first 1,000 feet, they don't have enough time to do anything. Plus, it takes, on the average, I think it takes about 7 seconds if you press the engine up to full speed, it takes about 7 seconds for that engine to react, right? To full
speed.
So if you need full speed to keep yourself in flight, you don't have 7 seconds. And if you're 1,000 feet above the ground, you don't have 7 seconds. You might have less than that when you hit the ground. Anyway, so that's what happened to me. I always watch that stuff. You know, we have these great pilots. I mean, this one Southwest Airlines, the guy I watch is a guy named Captain Stevie. It's Steeveve, something like that. He's on within any airplane incident.
Yeah, they always
on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I watched him today or yesterday about that 737 landing at Midway, where they had the videos. It was in the air, and you could see the other plane crossing the runway in front of it.
Wow.
You could see that. And then he was explaining what was happening, and he was saying, look how cool this pilot is. He had the audio from the pilot in the tower, and the guy just went go around and just, yeah, we're going to go around. And it was really calm and cool, and he said, that's how calm and cool these pilots are. They know how to do that go around. And later, though, he was giving an example. The private jet, which was crossing the runway, he explained how they made the mistake. And he has, you know, layouts of the runway. He kind of shows where the planes are. It's really, really detailed. And you could see here the conversation with the tower. And the tower told him specifically what to do. The private jet didn't do it. Or, as Captain Stevie said, they misunderstood which runway they were on. In any event, Captain Stevie said, this pilot just got a message from the tower that no pilot wants to get. And then he said, here's what it is. And the tower said to the pilot, you need to call the airport control center at this phone number right away.
Oh, because he got in trouble?
Oh, hell yes, he's in trouble. I hope they take his license away.
You mean not the Southwest pilot, the private pilot?
Well, sure. The private pilot's the ones in trouble. He was crossing the runway. Southwest was landing. They were cleared to land.
Yeah.
I was listening to the audio. The tower clearly gave the private plane instruction that said, stop, stop, stop. That was the message before you get to runway 22L. And apparently they didn't know. They made a mistake about 22L. So they crossed 22L. That's where the Southwest is landing. I may get the landing numbers wrong, but that's basically what was happening. So the private pilot was told to stop three times. Stop, stop, stop. He didn't stop.
Oh, man.
So Captain Stevie said he obviously didn't know which runway the tower was talking about. And he should. And Stevie shows the runways, the runway map with all the numbers on it, 22L, 22 right, Fox, Alpha, exit. It's very detailed. This guy, if you want to really listen to the guy, he's excellent. And anytime there's an event, bingo, within like, in like an hour, he's got an explanation of it. He's got all the audio and he kind of explains what's happening. And he says he was very complimentary of the Southwest pilots. These guys were so cool.
Yeah. You know, I love Southwest. I write about them in my book. And now everybody's attacking Southwest. When you get to the top, when everybody loves you, that's when people got to try to knock you down. Everybody's knocking them down now.
Hercules. Now,
so anyway, okay, now switching to sports. You still, yeah. Did you say Houston, KU lost, Missouri lost, Drake, where my son Lee played football at, they were shocker, beat Missouri. Yeah. You still think, I think you said Houston, you're putting your money on Houston.
I don't know what I'm talking about in basketball. Well, I thought KU would win, and I thought MU would win, and I was wrong in both of them, and I lost money.
Auburn, is up there. St. John's didn't look that good last night. They barely pulled it off. But NCAA time, March Madness. I got all 16 picks, first night picks right on one of my brackets, and two are at 14. So I'm sitting pretty good.
What's our time now, Dan?
What's that?
What's our time?
Well, we got about 3-4 minutes left, so any words of wisdom we want to close on? Today we didn't have a lot of banter. We didn't have a lot of controversy, which is good sometimes because it was educational, but we didn't talk about some of the
– talk about the DOE.
Yeah, we talked about that.
What did we say about it?
Well, we said it's good to return the money, but you just I still believe that they're rushing it a little bit. They got to, because you can send money like to a state of like Kansas or Iowa. They'll know what to do with it. But if you send or Idaho or Wyoming does a pretty good job, Utah. But you send it to some states that don't know what to do with the money, then they're going to waste it. And here's my concern, and it's the ugly side of politics. When you get people that run for state board of education that are running strictly on social issues and not education issues, then you got those people controlling the dollars, which can be not a good thing.
Well, that's fine. But let's talk about what is the impact of dismantling DOE. One, of course, is relying on the states to develop good educational programs, right? That's one thing.
Is there a model? Maybe that's it. There's another opportunity for us. We gather the best and brightest minds and come up with a model.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Musk has got an idea on that. I'm not sure if colleges can educate. I mean, they haven't proven they can, right?
Yeah.
In fact, what they've proven is that they can give educational programs where people can't get a job. And they've proven that they support loaning these people money. Many of these people probably shouldn't be in college in the first place. And then you can't pay the debt, and the college has no responsibility for it. But the other thing the colleges do, or DOE does, is manage the $1.6 trillion in student debt.
Yeah, I saw that, and they're going to turn that over. They're going to turn it over to the SBA, which you have a background. You've taught a lot.
That would be the worst thing they can do. Heaven forbid if they do that. The SBA is another one of like, oh my God. I mean, the SBA. We know this. They've made so many. That they're the ones that made all these loans to people that are 11 years old during the COVID system, right?
Yeah.
I have a loan to them. Our company has a loan to them, which I keep telling them, you told me this was debt would not have to be paid.
I know, it's a big brouhaha.
Now they're making me pay a monthly payment every month for 30 years, which is crap in and of itself. I'm going to be dead in 15. Who's going to pick up the other 15? They don't care. That's my whole point. No, the SBA, in my mind, is the last thing. I mean, I know they're looking at the SBA. They're looking at privatizing it. But it's chaos. Now, I know people, personally know people that have got student loans, significant student loans. And we have a situation right now where if you wanted to pay off your loan, you don't even know who to write the check to. There's nobody on the other side. You can't, but your interest is still building up.
Yeah. What do you think about the rumors without the facts? So I never, but Social Security, they're cutting a lot of offices, and you get Social Security, I get Social Security. We're now going to have to prove ourselves face to face.
No, I don't think that's true.
Well, I don't think it's got to be true. It can't be true.
I think what's true is that maybe going forward, there has to be a better authentication process for Social Security, which makes sense to me, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember now how I authenticated myself, but somehow I authenticated myself. And maybe that needs to be corrected, right?
Yeah. Actually, their website, the ssa.gov, is not too bad, yeah. You know, for a website. Yeah. It gives good information. I can find out what I made in 1978.
The government's got some good websites. The Social Security website's good. I think the Medicare process is good. Now, my guess is all those things are handled or deployed by some private corporation. They're not actually run by civil servants who're sitting at their desk doing computer work.
It's a service, huh?
Somewhere, it's a service somewhere. But going back to the point about the DOE, there's so many parts to the Department of Education. But I agree with Trump. The only way to start it is to say we're going to dismantle it. Now, I'm sure he knows there's going to be some parts they can't dismantle. There's going to be a remaining part. If only just to keep the student loans going,
yeah,
or collecting the student loans, right? But it's a problem. So the impact of dismantling DOE, aside from the educational component, there's these other sidebar things that the DOE has been doing, like student loans.
We got to dig more into that in the breaking in the days ahead here on Banter. But we, you know, we try to keep it to 50 minutes. People want to write us webtalkwithbob@gmail, webtalkwithbob@gmail. People wonder, where's that Web Talk with Bob come from? You and I used to have a radio program. When was that? 2009, 2010, called Web Talk with Bob. We were talking about Apple iPhones versus Androids, which one would become the dominant. You won. I was saying Androids. It was iPhone. But we were talking technology. You had some good predictions. But as we wind down here, Banter, any words of wisdom? Folks, we'll be back soon. Watch us on YouTube. Comment, like, subscribe, or on iTunes. If you follow Bob, is it under Web Talk with Bob?
Listen, guys and gals, pass this around. I know that we have more to say than Joe Rogan and other big podcasters. And we're saying it in common sense terms, the way a person who reads about it would comment on it. We're not having celebrities on who basically are there only because they're influencers, or they play great tennis, or they play great football, or they're a great actor. We're just like a couple of people from the Midwest talking about what's happening in our environment.
We're heartland homies. We're the heartland homies that banter.
Now, make us the biggest podcasting, bantering podcasters in the United States. Help us.
I bet we are probably, as terms of anybody that says banter podcast, I think we're probably number one.
That means when you go on podcasts, look for the term banter. That's all I got. We talked about a lot of things, DOE, Boeing.
Okay. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be back with Banter with Bob and Dan, Web Talk with Bob @gmail if you want to write us. Okay, bye-bye.